Welcome to Black at School, the USC Race and Equity Center's series on addressing racial problems that disadvantage Black students across America. Black at School offers parents and families language, tools, and strategies to disrupt racism and racial inequalities in classrooms, in curriculum, and in their children's interactions with peers and educators. In this episode, Jessica DeQuire-Gunby, the Robert Naslin Professor in the Rossier School of Education at the University of Southern California, talks about ways Black families can take care of themselves while advocating for their Black children. DeQuire-Gunby is the president of the American Psychological Association's Educational Psychology Division and the mother of a Black teenage son. Her four books include Race and Ethnicity in the Study of Motivation in Education. Let's hear now from Professor DeQuire-Gunby.
So before I begin, I want to paint the scene of what is going on in most of our lives each and every day. So Black people are experiencing multiple systems of oppression. I mean, of course, there's racism that we've been talking about, but then we experience sexism, classism, ableism, some of us experiencing heterosexism. So all the different isms, right? And these experiences occur in all contexts. You know, we experience them at work, we experience it at school, in healthcare, you know, when you go to see the doctor, you have to deal with those different issues. You know, in media, you know, when you turn and go on Facebook, you go on Instagram, you're seeing it everywhere. And it's a society as a whole. And then many of us are old enough to be a part of what we call the sandwich generation. So we are taking care of our children, and some of us are taking care of our aging parents at the same time. So we're sandwiched in. So there's stress there. And then the general stress of life. You know, we're dealing with work-life balance, so we got all the stuff we're dealing with work, then we got all the stuff we're trying to balance with our kids and family. Then you're still trying to pay your bills because, you know, because prices are just high, gas is high. I know grocery bills are high. I could tell you right now, groceries are going up the last couple of weeks. I mean, it is what it is. And so you're balancing that and stress of that. You got, you know, different commitments in your life, church commitments, maybe community commitments. So you're balancing all those different things. And then, you know, we've all been working our way through what we call a syndemic. And a syndemic is when there are two or more epidemics or pandemics at the same time. So remember, we had COVID-19, we had the Me Too movement, we had Black Lives Matter, and now we're dealing with the unrest, you know, regarding Gaza that, you know, you see sweeping the country, particularly in our universities. So, you know, we have all the stress that's dealing with that. And so, and then something racist happens at your child's school. And so you have to invest a lot of time and resources into resolving that issue. And, you know, that could take a lot of time. And then you have to also focus on helping your child be well, which can take a long time as well. And all of this produces a lot of cumulative stress, a lot of race-related stress and trauma. And throughout it all, you need to take care of yourself. And so today I'm going to talk to you about and give you a few ways to take care of yourself while you are advocating for your Black child. So number one, I know this may sound easy, but it's hard for a lot of us to do, but give yourself permission to focus on yourself. As Black parents, we often put ourselves last or neglect ourselves altogether. And we're busy at work, we're busy helping our families, we're busy helping our children. We're doing all these different things, but you know, but we're not taking time to take care of ourselves to make sure we're well. As poet and activist Audre Lorde said, caring for myself is not self-indulgence. It is self-preservation. And that is an act of political warfare. So we cannot fight racism if we aren't well. We can't help our children if we are not well. If at Audre Lorde discussed self-care in the context of addressing anti-Black racism and activism, self-care is rooted in Black activism. So taking care of yourself is being pro-Black. So I want you to think about that. But the term self-care has been co-opted, or shall I say stolen and whitewashed. And so when you hear self-care, I want you to think about Audre Lorde and think about how it is in a Black activist term. It is a Black activist practice of self-care because you have to take care of yourself in order for you to engage in appropriate activism you need to be doing, particularly take care of your children. Number two, learn to say no. Once again, it's simple, but you need to learn to balance all the different tasks you have going on. You can't take on everything. You cannot do everything. So you need to learn how to prioritize and do the things that are most important for you and that you need to do. You know, just as it's important to give yourself permission to focus on yourself, it's okay for you to say no to things. You know, prioritize and do what's necessary for your health and sanity. Remember that sometimes fun things can also be stressful. I know a lot of people that, you know, are engaged in a lot of things in church, for example. But, you know, it's stressful for you to go to choir practice, the women, deacon board, Bible study, you know, service one and service two. I mean, that's a lot of time you're going and committing to the church. Not to pick on the church and not to say the church is not a good thing. But, you know, when you're balancing all the other different things that you're balancing in your life, maybe that's a little bit too much of a commitment for you to take on. So learn how to say no. Take on only what you can take on. So learn to limit all the things that give you stress, not just, you know, work or not just, you know, but work stuff, family stuff that you might have to limit, you know, community stuff that you're involved with, you know, limit the different things and take on right-sized pieces of what you can actually do. But along with that, learn to ask for help. That's number three. You know, a lot of times, particularly Black women, you know, people see us as superwomen, that, you know, we could do everything. But guess what? We can't do everything. You know, we need help. We need people to help us. So we can't do everything by ourselves. It's just too much to do. And so we need to learn to ask for assistance. We have family. We have friends. We have coworkers. And we truly need to embrace the community approach. You know, we always hear that mantra, oh, it takes a village. Well, guess what? You need to talk to your village about helping you do all the stuff you need to do. And try not to wait too late to ask for help. Be proactive in asking people for help. You know, prioritize what you need. Ask them for help early. Don't wait until, you know, your head's way underwater for you to ask for help. Ask for help early. Okay, number four. You need to prioritize your mental health. Okay, this is a big one. As Black people, we experience race-based stress or racial trauma. And what I mean by racial trauma is that's the constant experiencing of racial harm or discrimination, whether actual, perceived, or vicarious. So this means, you can experience racial trauma by either actually experiencing racial discrimination, so that means it actually happened to you, perceives racial discrimination, meaning you think it happened to you, so you're still having all of the physiological and emotional reaction, or even vicarious racial discrimination. That means you're seeing it happen to somebody else. And so this could be individual or collective experience. So you individually can have these things or collectively. Think about what happened with George Floyd. That was a collective experience that we all, you know, shared it, but that was vicarious. You know, we saw the videos and we vicariously experienced that racial harm and racial trauma. And so, we are experiencing racial trauma from a lot of different things that we experience in our lives, whether it is, once again, actual, perceived, or vicarious. And then many of us are dealing with other types of traumas. And so many of us, particularly in the Black community, are dealing with sexual trauma. And we rarely talk about that. And so all of those things are compounded. Racial trauma, the stress you're experiencing every day, all those things, all those traumas you have that are deeply rooted, they're compounded. And you can't process those things by yourself. So you need to talk to somebody about that. Like the Black community, you know, has a big stigma with going to therapy. And we need to get beyond that. One of my favorite Black television shows was the show Blackish. The grandmother in the show, played by Jennifer Lewis, Ruby, you know, she had this wonderful saying that, you know, Black people don't need therapy. We just need Black Jesus, a hot bath, and a candle. You know what? But Black Jesus, a hot bath, and a candle is great, but you still need to go and talk to a licensed professional if you're dealing with a lot of serious issues. You can find a Black therapist, or a therapist that focuses on multicultural approaches. I mean, you have online therapists that if you don't want to leave your house, I mean, there are in-person therapists, but, you know, you could find, anybody that you need. And so Dr. Harper just put a site in there for you. This site that we just put in there has some mental health resources that you can find helpful. If you scroll down to the bottom of that particular site, they have links to resources for Black men, Black women, children, how to find Black therapists in your area. So a lot of variety of resources on mental health care issues in a community. Once again, I strongly recommend that, you know, you take your mental health care very seriously and don't be afraid to actually go and talk to someone. Number five, which comes an extension of mental health care, is learning to engage in positive coping techniques rather than negative coping. We're dealing with, you know, daily stressors. And so we have to engage in strategies to help us to deal with those stressors and anxiety that we experience on a daily basis. And so when dealing with racial trauma, it's very common for people to engage in, both healthy and unhealthy coping strategy. Some of the unhealthy coping strategies that we see people engage in, unfortunately, is like drinking, smoking, doing drugs, social isolation, emotional eating, and, you know, gambling is a big one now as well. So we want to get people to kind of move away from engaging in those types of behaviors and engage in more positive things. Particularly with coping with racism, one common particular strategy is what's called resistance strategies. And these are when we actively engage in resisting white norms or defying stereotypes or confronting perpetrators. So it's like if someone, racially discriminates against you or engages in, you know, uses a racial microaggression, and you actually, resist by actually talking to them or teaching them about what they did wrong. But I'm not going to go into those very much because that is more work. And today, I don't want to encourage you to do more work. I want you to focus on taking care of yourself. So instead of talking about those resistance strategies, I want to talk to you about more, collective and self-protective coping strategies. But I did want to mention those resistance strategies just so you know there are some other options out there, because I know there are some people like, look, you know, if I'm experiencing some of these things, I want to go. I want to tell people about what's going on. So there are some of those out there. But the collective and self-protective coping strategies that you can do, for instance, are like mindfulness, you know, really being in the moment and deep breathing, journaling, engaging in hobbies. You know, one great thing about COVID was like everyone was doing hobbies and, you know, people were baking and cooking and, you know, had a garden in the backyard and it was sewing and knitting, you know, engaging in hobbies, things that kind of help you relax. Exercising, particularly things that, help you relieve stress, like yoga or Pilates or walking. So practicing positive thinking, you know, get all those negative thoughts out your head. Developing networks and communities, like, I mentioned going to church, but going to church, sense of spirituality, join a club, book clubs are, really, really helpful. But healthy coping is about engaging and those strategies that help you to relieve that anxiety and stress. And it's about doing those positive things that help you, to relieve the anxiety you may feel from, a lot of the racial trauma that you're experiencing. Number six. Okay, this is a really good one too. Make your physical health a priority in your life. So stress makes everything absolutely worse. And race-based stress especially makes everything worse. And so there's been a lot of research that indicates that prolonged exposure to racial trauma is associated with poor cardiovascular health. It's like high blood pressure, heart attack and stroke. And it's also linked to things like poor birth outcomes, including increased preterm birth, low birth weight, and high maternal morbidity and mortality. Racial trauma is causing us to die, and it's causing us to be really, really sick. And there's even been some research or some theories that suggest that Black people experience what's called transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. Let me repeat that one. It's a big one. Transgenerational epigenetic inheritance. That's just a fancy way of saying how ancestral exposure to trauma can impact descendants across generations. So basically, we genetically inherit trauma through our body chemistry, cells, and genetics from our ancestors. And that contributes as to why we have all the different health disparities that we have. So in addition to all those trauma, all the stressors that I mentioned earlier, we also dealing with trauma that we inherited from our ancestors. That's a theory that's out there. So if that's the case, you know, so think about all the trauma we might be dealing with all of what our ancestors have dealt with in terms of the racial trauma they've dealt with. The racial trauma alone that they've dealt with that we may have inherited, that our bodies have inherited. And so that may help explain a lot why we have some of the racial disparities that we have, racial health disparities that we have. And we have a lot of top health disparities. We have a lot of health disparities. You know, I mentioned, you know, some of the links that we have in terms of infant mortality and maternal mortality, but we are also at some of the, you know, we have some of the highest, you know, rates of infant and maternal mortality. We also have highest rates of cardiovascular disease. We have some of the highest rates for cancer, particularly Black women tend to have the highest rates, tend to die from breast cancer more so than any other racial group. Black men tend to die more so from any other racial group from prostate cancer. We have some of the highest rates of HIV, AIDS, asthma, diabetes, chronic kidney disease, obesity. You know, so we have a lot of health issues. So we need to do everything we can do to help minimize, you know, our health issues, you know, minimize the impact of genetics that we may have inherited, and definitely reduce any of the stress that we have in our lives because of kind of, you know, what we may already be just be predisposed to. So everybody, take care of your bodies, eat well, take your vitamins, exercise. Yeah, you know, stay hydrated, everyone. It is so important to drink your water, and be very serious about preventative health care. Go get your yearly physicals. Go to the doctor. I know a lot of us don't like to go to the doctor, but go to the doctor. Get your mammograms. Get your yearly mammograms. There was just a study that's saying that women are starting to get diagnosed with breast cancer at early ages. Go get your mammograms. Men, get your prostate exams. Go get your tests done. You know, get your colorectal exams done. You know, people are dying of a colon cancer getting diagnosed with colon cancer at earlier ages now. And now they send you the little kit, so you just take them, you do it at home, and so it's not that invasive. But you still have to do those. I just let you all know I had a kit at home, and then for some reason I just didn't want to take it. I just kept on kicking the can, didn't want to take it. And then I checked Facebook one day, and one of my classmates put on Facebook that she got diagnosed with colon cancer with the same age, everything. And then that day I took my exam, took mine and sent it into my doctor's office, and everything was fine. But it took something like that to push me to go ahead and take mine. So now I'm going to make sure next time, next year, I'm going to get it done and just not waste any time. So do all your preventive exams. Take your blood pressure regularly, everybody. Take your physical health seriously. You'd rather be preventative with your health care rather than reactive with your health care. Okay, number 7. This is probably one of my favorite ones. Remember to take time to rest. Trisha Hershey, the author of Rest is Resistance, a manifesto, and founder of the NAP Ministry. You heard me right, NAP, N-A-P Ministry. Talks about rest being a form of liberation and reparation. She says rest is a form of resistance because it disrupts and pushes back against capitalism and white supremacy. So you all, you know, we need to start resting more because it helps us to push back against the whole grind, you know, culture. You know, in our society says, oh, you need to hustle, 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 get job 1, get job 2, you know, work, 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 work. And she's saying, no, we should, and our culture is telling us to build our whole life around working. You know, you go to work and then you go on vacation, or you push back vacation because you need to work. When you're on vacation, you're checking your email, you're checking your text, but you want to find out what's going on at work. And she said, no, we need to design our life around rest. And rest is about challenging the traditional views of work and centering your life around that. Because when you are tired, you are more susceptible to systems of oppression, and you can't fight back against white supremacy. And you need that rest to be able to advocate for your children. And so we need to be resting. And rest is not just taking naps, because that's part of it, but it's also just taking time to do the things, the fun things you want to do, and not centering your world around working, centering around having fun and honoring your ancestors, and doing all the things that center who you are as a person, rather than just, you know, continually supporting our capitalist society. And Trisha Hershey supports taking a nap 20 minutes a day, hence her nap ministry. She says taking a nap is a form of resistance. That is, you know, that is your resisting. But also research has shown that 20 to 30 minute power naps help improve memory, information processing, alertness, and mood. So while you're resisting, you're also helping out with your cognitive skills. So rest is resistance. And, you know, go for the longer forms of rest. So, of course, take those naps if you can, but take that time off from work. You know, what you're saving those vacation days for, take them. Use those sick days. I mean, you know, a lot of times if you don't use those sick days, you're going to lose them. Use them. If you're not feeling well, take them off. Use those sick days and actually take a vacation. When you vacation, vacation. So learn to rest. Take the small, you know, small rest days. Take your naps to rest, and then learn to take, you know, rest days. And so she talks a lot of different ways you engage in rest and centering yourself and to resist against our work culture. And Dr. Harper is going to share a really nice link that she's doing a podcast where she talks about rest, and she talks about her book, and she talks about her about rest as resistance. And I think you will find it really helpful. You can find that link in the chat. Okay. Number eight, Dr. Tima Bryant, psychologist. She's also the former president of American Psychological Association and a trauma researcher, talks about the importance of cultivating joy as a practice of resistance. So we have rest as resistance and cultivating joy as a practice of resistance. It's important to express and experience joy every day, regardless of what is going on. So it's important for you to be joyful, for regardless of, you know, we are having a good day or bad day. Joy is important for what's going on. Physically experiencing joy can help you protect against anxiety and depression. It can decrease your stress hormones, strengthen the immune system, and it just helps you just feel better, to be joyful, to laugh, to smile. Dr. Bryant talks about reclaiming our joy as an intentional act of resistance. It is a daily decision. You have to decide every day that you're going to be joyful, especially when it is not a good day or when bad things are happening. So engage in something affirming every day that brings you joy. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It could be a small thing. You know, some people do a little morning joy ritual, like they do little affirmations every day. Some people, I know people listen to their song. It's like their song, their theme song. They put it on every day to get them going every day. That's the thing that brings them joy. You know, I have friends that they put their favorite gospel song on as they drive their children to school every day. That's what brought them joy. You know, for me, I watch snippets of you know, I still watch soap operas. Yeah, I admit it. I watch Young and the Restless, and I watch Days of Our Lives. But one of the reasons I watch them, because my mom used to watch them. My mom's deceased, and my dad is deceased too. My mom used to watch soap operas, and my dad, he claimed he didn't watch them, but he watched them too. And so when I watch them, they kind of give me a connection to my parents. And so it brings me joy to kind of, you know, watch them and remember them and remember what characters they liked and didn't like. So just watching those soap operas, just even just a little bit every day, brings me joy. So whatever it is brings you joy, make sure you do a little bit of that every day. It doesn't have to be a big thing. It'll be something just 5 minutes. But do something that brings you joy every day. And that joy, because you want to have a physical manifestation of joy, because that helps you, you know, that helps you to physically fight off anxiety and the trauma. And so, and I recommend that you view Dr. Tima Bryant's Homecoming podcast. Dr. Harper is going to put it in the chat. And she has like 195 different episodes of different mental health topics. You know, some of the things about the joy as act of resistance. So that's some of the topics, but she has a wide variety of topics, mental health topics that you would just find absolutely helpful. She's absolutely a wonderful resource. So I highly recommend that you check out her YouTube channel. Number nine, develop a community celebration system. So Dr. Bryant also talks about collective joy. So while you're experiencing your individual joy, it's important to have a collective joy. So you need a community, a family and friends where members celebrate each other. There's a group of people that lift each other up. So these could be a group of close friends, a close work group, a close co-workers, where you celebrate your wins and you serve as a source of support when things are tough. I know you're in sister circles or it's kind of a support group, but you need to be around people with common interests that support you, that really want you to win. They celebrate when you win and you celebrate when they win, or when you're not doing well, they're there to support you. And when they're not doing well, you're there to support them. And so similarly, Tricia Hersey talks about community care, and we need to move beyond self-care to communicate, to learn how to take care of each other. And so, you know, we can't be well as an individual if our community is not well. So we need to be engaged in self-care and community care, because we all have to learn how to take care of each other. Because if you think of, think back in days past, that's how communities made it. It's because Black people, we took care of each other. We weren't just engaged. We weren't just focusing on ourselves. We're focusing on how well everyone in our community was. And so community care is really important. Number 10, my last one, it's really important for you to model good self-care so that your children will learn good self-care and community care. You know, it's important to engage in good self-care so you can be your best self. And so that everything I talked about today is about so you can be your best self, and so that you can be able to advocate for your children. So once again, if you're not well, you can't advocate for your children. But you must also engage in self-care so that you are modeling this for your children. Your children watch what you do and they emulate what you do. And what we want to do is to create a pattern of behavior. So as you engage in self-care and good community care, then your children are going to also engage in good self-care and community care. And then the pattern is going to go on and on and on and for generations and generations to come. So we want to make sure that your children understand the importance of taking care of themselves and the importance of taking care of the community. And so, you know, so start modeling that good self-care and community care so that your children will understand that self-care and community care is a priority.